the animation to program the robot, they actually mocapped a real scooter puppet that was being puppeteered by a human, mocapped him, and then put that mocap onto, with that data onto the animatronic puppet.
That's amazing.
All right, welcome back to Denoised. Addy, good to see you.
Hey, Joey, what's up, man?
How's it going? It's been busy, I think, for both of us.
It's been a couple of weeks. Yeah, we've been busy.
It's been a busy, yeah, luckily. And also, everyone I keep talking to has been pretty busy, so I am glad to hear that. All right, let's see. Let's talk about Google. I'll be at Google I.O. for the first time next week, so I'm going to check that out. Awesome. I'm excited to check that out. If anyone's going to be there, let me know. Hit me up. We can meet up. But yeah, this is sort of their developer conference where they announce a lot of stuff. So at the minimum, I'm expecting VO4 and Nano Banana Pro 2. That feels like baseline.
That's the minimum expectation?
That feels like, I mean, there hasn't been a big VO update in a while. We've got Seedance 2. We've got Kling 3. Obviously, they've been working on something. I saw some teases online of potential stuff. I didn't share because I saw one clip and I don't really know the validity of it. And I haven't seen anything
else.
Can
I share some rumors?
Sure, go for it.
Google rumors. So I heard that it is very close to VO is very close to having a high dynamic range or some crazy resolution upgrade to the video model.
Okay, that is welcome. So what's some potential 4K 16-bit? Maybe not 16-bit, but...
Maybe not. I would say maybe 10-bit 4K is closer territory. Yeah, so hopefully you get to see that live.
Hopefully, yeah. Looking forward to whatever new stuff in the creative pipeline, but then also whatever else they got cooking up. Like, this video just went around from Google DeepMind. We are reimagining a 50-year-old interface, the mouse pointer, with AI. So this demo is
mouse pointer's fine.
This still makes me think of just the rethinking all of our interfaces and websites and all that stuff for whatever this agentic future is. This was not fully like an agentic thing. This was more like using your mouse pointer and voice as a two pair combo to be like pointing at something and then being like, hey, do this thing. And basically Gemini sort of understanding the entire context of what's happening on your computer and then taking action.
Wow, that's cool. So it's like just kind of pointed in the general direction and then Gemini has enough context to do the action for you.
One of the demos was pointing at a to-do list and then saying like add emojis to that. That's not the most useful example. But the other one was like pointing at an address and then being like, hey, show me the direction. So like how I would get here. And then it like loads up maps and your location and then direction to there. These are very simple things, but the idea is like it is understanding what's happening on the computer and taking action. My mind is going to things that I've hit roadblocks with trying to do with Claude Code, like build out a fusion node in DaVinci Resolve. The Claude can kind of control DaVinci Resolve, but it can't build out like complicated nodes and stuff like that. It also just doesn't know what it's doing. It'll like control apps.
It's flying blind.
Yeah, it'll be like, I think I did it, but like I can't verify. I can't see. I don't know. So you have to check. So if this is a step towards that direction too, where you can kind of have better visual understanding of what's, or the AI can have better understanding of what's happening on the computer to help you do things. Interesting.
Yeah, I think the important here is the interactive feedback type. So the AI system can see and kind of understand and read what you're trying to do, which is important to have a two-way communication between the AI system and the computer itself.
Yeah, and it's interesting that it's, because, you know, we've heard a lot about just text control and speech to text or just voice control. And this is not totally throwing out the mouse pointer. It's just like, what if you use pointing and voice in conjunction?
Yeah, I would love for this to be in Blender or some crazy software where, you know, you don't have to really know it. You kind of just point the mouse.
Yeah.
And just kind of say.
Yes, we've seen, like our last episode, where we talked about Claude just taking over everything and integrating with everything. But yeah, there is a limit to how far you can get just through text prompting Claude and telling it what you want. You need that back and forth dynamic. And this feels like it gets a little bit closer to that back and forth dynamic.
Totally. Okay. All right. I take it back. I was like, hey, why mess with the mouse?
Okay.
I guess.
Other thing from DeepMind, it's still in a research preview. It is called Fabula. And it is a story writing AI assistant that they worked with in development with a bunch of playwrights and screenwriters and based it off of story structure books. And the idea is for it to be a sidekick as you write, build out your scaffolding for your story structure and sort of this, again, not the AI doing this stuff for you, but the AI assisting you.
Yeah, it's like an assistive agentic story writer that helps you build a hierarchy of the story, but not necessarily come up with ideas and things like that.
Yeah, or helping you refine beats or story beats or building out character structure. And then that scaffolding. So as you do flesh out the story, you have this baseline that you're working with.
Okay. Two things. I love this. I love that they're thinking about this. Of course, this is a precursor to, let's say, a video model, right? Like this could potentially be an end-to-end pipeline that's fully assisted.
Story.
Agentic.
Storyboard.
Yeah. Shots, storyboard.
Video.
Shots. Yeah. Cutting. VFX. Blah, 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 blah. Now, two things. One, I'm going to cite Ben Affleck. He was right about this. I think he was on the Joe Rogan show or something where he was like, look, all these agentic story building things are just going to deduce down to the most average and the most overused story formats. So how do you create a story that is asymmetrical, that is completely unconventional? Like how you create Memento? That's backwards.
Yeah.
Right. So like that's where the art lies, is the outlier stuff. And so, yeah, I think this stuff is probably not going to be very useful for somebody who's trying to really break the mold. But if you're generating 100 videos a week, you're a YouTube content creator.
You're doing verticals.
Yeah.
Verticals are like, hell yeah. Let's go.
Let's go.
Give me the slot machine. Christmas in random town.
Not even a slot machine. Just generate all 100 of them. I don't care. Just put it out there.
Yeah. You know, you just reminded me of something before the AI days and all this stuff. You know, there have been tons of
Can't even remember those days.
From a time long ago. There were tons of, you know, screenwriting books and, like, this is how you write your screenplay. And, like, this is what you have to hit in the first. This is what you have to have on page one. This is what you have to have on, like, first act. And this is what you have to have, like, second act. Then there was always a course of, you know, screenwriters of just, like, yeah, if you want to write something formulaic, then, yeah, follow those screenwriting books. But if you want to be original, then, like, throw those books out and, like, write something completely different.
Yes.
And this is just the AI. This is the AI version of the screenwriting book. So it's, like, cool. It helps you if you want the help. And if you don't want it, and yeah, sure, it will give you something that follows a formula pattern. You could argue, like, you know, I mean, that was Here with a Thousand Faces, where, like, as humans, we have the same story archetypes that we've been doing for thousands of years. Regardless, if you want to do something completely different and throw it out the window, like a Pulp Fiction or Memento.
Exactly.
You know, that's for humans. That's where,
yeah.
You know,
okay. I have human creativity comes in. On how to be super creative for really, really cheap and very easily. Okay. I call it the Jim Cramer fabula. Do you get it? So you have fabula make the story and just reverse everything.
Like
and
the
now
anti-chip.
You have something amazing.
I think you could do that today, too, if you just go to ChatGPT and you're like, give me 10 ideas, and it gives it to you. You're like, thank you. Garbage.
Garbage. Yeah.
That's
like the opposite of
that's
those
the
10
do not
ideas
write
is
list.
My idea. That's it. That's how you become famous.
All right. Jim Cramer.
Jim Cramer
School of Screenwriting. Okay, good. I like that. Okay, this one I've been texting out to people and everyone's going crazy over it.
Yeah, dude. I nearly blew my mind over there.
So we have talked about World Labs. We've talked about generative text to 3D Nielsen, who I believe works at World Labs. Yes. Built an open source tool that is basically open sourcing a 3D gen toolkit for Claude Code. You give it an input image, and then it is basically pulling World Labs text to 3D models, which we'll get into in a second, and using Claude Code to build out the full 3D space, but with your 3D models, with the world, with lighting, physics, audio.
So crazy.
This is like World Labs on steroids.
Yeah, this is somebody at World Labs who used Claude Code to its full potential.
And open sourced it. Thank you. You can download the Git. I have not messed with this yet, but this is on my high on my list because this could potentially solve a lot of things I wanted to try to do.
This is exactly where AI should be heading.
The skills harness against an input image and generate meshes with a combination of image generation and 3D generation.
Sure.
I'm assuming you could also, I think it's calling up different file APIs. So I'm assuming you could also plug and play your favorite text to 3D mesh model of choice that you might not be locked in anything. World Apps is kind of the only thing that will do like a full 360 environment.
But like
build.
For them to decompose a world into individual 3D models, that's pretty freaking hard.
And finally, there's a companion app to view and pose all the objects that were created. Oh, wait, there's like an actual app that you can do this into? What?
Yeah, that's crazy. It has physics. Like, do you see that thing get tossed around and bounce off the floor?
Yeah, it's thrown around a chair and stuff, like as if it already has all the stuff built in of what it should be doing.
And I think also audio, right? If I'm not mistaken.
He said audio. I don't know where the audio
like if the chair hits the floor, there's a sound generated?
I guess.
I mean, you're getting really close to game engine territory here.
So it's called Image Blaster. Creates 3D environments, sound effects, and meshes from a single image using Claude skills, World Labs, and Fall. So yeah, I mean, this is like basically built this your 3D world, but now it has models, it has texture, so you can move things around, you can edit it, you can modify it, but you're just getting that like crazy fast, good starting point.
Yeah, I mean, call me old-fashioned, but this feels perfect for Previs. Build this world very, very quickly, put the world up, and then start moving things around. Put the camera where you want it, and then that goes into image model or video model for traditional 2D output.
I mean, definitely Previs, or definitely, you know, I mean, I'm still on this path of, like, can we, you know, this is like a next level up of gray boxing. Can we kind of quickly iterate a world and then feed that into some Gen AI pass and have the consistency of a 3D world or from different angles, but then we get to final pixel faster?
Exactly. And I think in 2026, we're mid-2026, that feels like everybody's on the same page with that. Is like text to video, a text to image is not quite the control that I need. It's not working. Mm-hmm. I do want the traditional 3D controls, but I don't want to mess with rigging. I don't want to mess with keyframes and animation. Mm-hmm. So give me something easier there. But then I love the final quality that generative AI gets us. So finish it with that.
Yeah, finish it with that, but at least I have my consistent world, so when I give you these inputs, I am getting that consistency, hopefully, in theory. That's still got some kinks to work out on that one, but that's the idea, or I think where this is going. Yeah, so Wild Tool, open source, we'll put the link in the description, but it's called Image Blaster.
Shout out to Nielsen.
All right, now let's talk about some of our favorite things. AI pitchforks. Someone.
That's Van Gogh. No, Monet.
Monet. Yeah. Okay. Shlomes posted this image where he said, "I just generated an image in the style of a Monet painting using AI. Please describe in as much detail as possible what makes this inferior to a real Monet painting."
You're just asking for it.
And so then, you know, unsurprisingly, got a bunch of critiques of saying, you know, how it's terrible, how it's wrong, how it's crappy.
Yeah, you trained on Monet data. Of course it's going to be exactly like it.
Turns out, it actually is a real Monet painting, and he just said it was AI to trigger people. And
I mean, it's just the style transfer.
So this tracks with research that people systematically downgrade their aesthetic assessments of art when told it's AI generated. So basically, we have talked about this before. As soon as anyone hears that AI is involved in something, they get upset.
Oh, okay. So that was spoofed in order to get actual scientific data on how.
Yeah, he posted this image saying it was an AI generated in the style of Monet, but it's real Monet. It was a crop. This is a crop section of an actual Monet painting. This is Monet.
That's what I thought.
This is not AI generated.
Okay.
But then all of the comments were saying how there's a certain harshness, no soft blending of colors, no depth, no symbiosis of the elements. It's all borked nonsense with no sense of space. No frame, no sense of the threshold between subject and object, just colors.
Okay, no frame because it is cropped. I give them that.
Okay, right. It is cropped. So sure, it is cropped. Maybe that affects the sense of the depth. But
colors are more pleasing to the eye. The brush strokes are more delicate. The water looks more... okay. Good notes. All right. You can tell the differences.
Extra different flowers.
I love it.
So basically, posted it, said it was AI. People got upset, said it was crap. Turns out it really is real Monet, and when people hear things are AI, regardless of the quality of the output, people get pissed about that.
Wow, that's such an interesting study, man. I'm really glad you brought this up. I mean, that kind of applies to our industry in a lot of ways. I mean, I know people on both sides of this fence.
I mean, you know, this is from like when we first kicked off the podcast, when the brutalist crap was happening.
Exactly.
You know, and it was like for clean up a little bit of the dialogue. Oh, used AI. Oh, whatever. That upset people. And then... yeah, all of the other stuff. And I think we talked about, too, how, like, Netflix has been playing it smart when they're, like, after the fact, mention, oh, by the way, we used AI for the VFX on this months after it aired, right, so that people weren't like, I'm going to not watch this thing.
And they're basically preparing and softening their landing, right, for the time when the eventual announcement comes that this movie is half generated in AI. I'm sure that's going to happen sooner or later.
Yeah, well, we also got that story coming up in a second of the animation studio.
That's right.
But yeah, I feel, you know, you've probably experienced the same thing. Like this year, 2026, has definitely been a big vibe shift just from everyone in general of more openly talking about AI. And anyone who was skeptical or dubious before has, for the most part, at least been like, to tell me about this AI stuff, like realizing it's not going away, and now they kind of got to get an understanding of it.
I mean, I'm going to play the other side of it for one second. I do understand the fear of somebody who spent their entire career just being really good at this one thing, right? Like when I was at DreamWorks, we had career modelers. Like they literally did was ZBrush for like 10, 15 years, and they're just so good at modeling 3D assets that they can charge people $50,000 for an object, but it's the best version of that object digitally. And overnight, their career, their craft, their expertise is more or less futile. So what else are you going to do? I mean, even if you try to learn the new tools and sort of apply your modeling knowledge to this new world, you're still not going to be as respected, as paid as you once were. So there's certain parts that I do get. Having said that, like not all of us are expert modelers and like we honed in on this one craft our whole life. Most of us, I think, are generalists and we're pretty well adaptable. And that's you and me for sure. And I think there's a place for us in this new world.
Yeah, I mean, the specialist, you know, it's like they still have the eye, you have the taste. It's like, how can you translate that over to, you know, whatever this Gen AI.
Yeah, and somebody was saying something really interesting to me the other day as well. They were like, hey, when we went from 2D animation, like The Lion King, to the first 3D, like Toy Story and Shrek 1 and so on, like there's a lot of 2D artists that were basically out of a job because they didn't pick up computers. They were just...
Same story with I'm blanking on his name. I know he's the super famous stop motion animator. You know, with Jurassic Park, when he did a stop motion test of a T-Rex run or a Velociraptor run, and then they did a CG test, and then he saw that and he's like, "I'm out of a job."
He's like, "Yeah."
He's like, "I'm extinct now." So, you know, he was world renowned stop motion animator, but the world kind of shifted. So it's the same.
Yeah, there's just the same shift every 10, 20 years of people that just kind of get left behind, and then some people that get elevated at the same time, and then and so on and so forth. But this churn that this time around, I think, is the most amplified and the most
impactful. It's also compounded in an easy punching bag. We talked about this before, of just like other economic issues completely outside of AI.
100%. We're just not in a LA good production place in general for this.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. If like LA production was churning and was what it was early 2000s, like, you know, maybe this
5
would not
years
be
ago, LA production issue. Was fine.
Yeah. And streamers were throwing a bunch of money at everything. Anyways.
Yeah. Okay.
Monet.
Monet. Yeah. Wait, I'm a fan of. I'm a fan of the real Monet. Not that.
We got another good AI punching bag story.
Yeah.
Okay, so this post came out from Sony Xperia, which honestly...
The phone?
Oh, is that their phone brand?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, their phone brand. Yeah.
Those are some nice cameras on those phones, dude. Have you ever used one?
I have not, but...
Chef's kiss on those cameras.
They posted this yesterday saying, the new AI camera assistant with Xperia Intelligence brings stories to life. And they showed this demo of these before and after photos of before and after with the AI camera assistant. If you're listening, the AI camera system after Photos look way worse.
Completely overprocessed, just blown out.
Overprocessed, overexposed. Yeah. Yeah.
The original retains so much detail, shadows, nuance. The AI one feels like AI slop.
So, you know, understandably, the internet had a fun field day with this.
The Michael Jackson one. Come on, dude. Show off your final one.
All right, I'll show this one. posted a follow-up post about this today.
Oh, okay. They apologized?
Following the post about AI camera system, we'd like to explain the feature in more detail. It doesn't edit photos after shooting. It suggests 4 settings in different creative directions based on the scene and subject. You can choose any option or use your own settings.
It's too late. So you ruined the brand.
That was a horrible demo. That was an awful demo of what they did before. This makes much more sense. This is like an auto exposure with more scene awareness, and it's like trying to do some auto exposure plus whatever settings to guess how you want to take
the picture. What's the AI part in these 4 suggestions? I don't see outpainting. I don't see new objects.
No, I think because it's not even it's saying it's before you take the picture. So like, you know, auto exposure would like look at your light meter and then adjust your like shutter and aperture based on your settings. This is taking that to the next level where maybe it's adjusting your color settings. Maybe it's doing something else before you hit take photo.
Right. I guess
so. That makes more sense. It was that was a horrible post. That was a horrible first post. That was a terrible post. This makes more sense. Like you use it, you don't use it. It's like auto exposure on steroids. I understand that more.
Right.
Terrible launch.
I would love a feature like this on like a professional camera, like a Red or a Sony Venice or something. Because like
they're gonna take you back and beat you up.
Unless
you're
Greg Fraser, you're not exposing the camera right, and you're not putting the light in the right place. You know, so to just get suggestions on some of these things before you hit that record button and record away 1 terabyte. This is highly.
Useful. I think what you're talking about is not just a auto thing on the Red.
But
a unified system app, your aperture lights and your camera and the vision you see is all connected, and
it's a look adjusted choice. So you have 4 different looks you can pick from. Mm-hmm. And each look will affect the LUT, the ISO and everything. And you can kind of play around and just experiment more with principal photography.
You heard it here first. Addy wants an automatic Red camera.
Yes.
Give me those autos.
No, I want a Sony Venice too.
Well, I don't know. Maybe you could.
If we get a Sony Venice too, then we'll talk great things about the Xperia
RA with autofocus. What's that new camera? What's the Nikon that has the Z sensor? Because that might have auto stuff in it.
The one that went to space?
The one that they just launched, the first new product that came out of the Nikon Red acquisition.
The Z9, I think.
It was like that. Wasn't it like that $2,000 camera, that $2,000 camera? It was
the little guy. Yeah, it's got to be like a Z90 or 900, something like that.
Yeah, this one feels like that would be your Red with some type of
smarts.
AI assistance. Yeah. Smart Red.
Does Sony have an AI department?
I'm sure they do. Like for what realm? They have Zen, which we covered at NAB, which is like their spatial capture ecosystem. They did release a broadcast camera. I didn't talk about this, but they released a broadcast ENG style camera that had a content authenticity credential built in. So like as you're recording with the camera, I don't know whose system they're using or if it's their own system, but it's like embedding data that like says this was, legit.
Like this is a real person.
this is real authentic video. I don't know what other software you need to verify and read that, but it was like the first camera that had that built in. We've talked about this before of like the different content credential systems that would be embedded in cameras to verify that footage was actually shot and not manipulated with.
And the same thing goes for generations. If it's an artificial generation, then the watermark should say that on the CAP, right?
It should. I mean, yeah, Adobe has that a lot and stuff. I think the onus is going to be more on verifying authentic material versus tracking generative material, because that's way easier
news
to
and like scrub world events
for news and verification and authenticity of like did someone actually film something happen? Was this an actual thing? I think the verification is going to need to be on the verifying real material rather than verifying AI stuff, because you could strip that pretty easily.
Sure, I can see that. And specifically on broadcast cameras, because that's what goes out in the field.
That's exactly. Yeah. That's why it was in an ENG style camera, right. not like a
cinema camera. Yeah. Our exactly. job is to make exactly. stuff up yeah. versus broadcast is to capture the truth. Right. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Right. All right. What else we got? Okay. So coming back to that Netflix story. So Netflix launched a AI animation studio called Ink.
Yeah. I heard about this while we were not shooting episodes, Joey. We could have talked about it earlier. But yeah, this is big news, because this is not like a team or a department. This feels like an entirely new studio that they're spinning up.
It's interesting too, because it's like also like, where's the line of like what Netflix is producing in-house versus where they're getting outside vendors? And this feels like a completely in-house vertical.
Sure. I mean, to start producing content. The scale at which Netflix operates, I think it's impossible to make everything in-house, right? So they'll handpick like the top 5% or 2% of the shows that they're going to make in-house. And then the rest, they absolutely have to go to vendors for. So my guess is this new studio is probably not going to be attached to anything substantial, like anything that's going to air on Netflix anytime soon, but they are going to start to spin up the production methodologies and sort of get the quality bar up and figure out how to actually make something with AI before that goes out into the streaming service.
Yeah. A little bit more in the article. They haven't posted anything publicly about it. Most of this info is sourced from job listings. And so Incubator's long-term technology strategy will focus on, quote, Gen AI-enabled workflows, artist tooling, and scalable, secure multi-show environments, according to one listing. Another listing says that they're about creating animated shorts and specials using experimental Gen AI native production pipelines. Mm-hmm. So yeah, starting short stuff for now, or experimental stuff to validate the workflows, and then moving to bigger things.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the budget for Blue Eye Samurai, I think, which was like $100+ million, you can now make a lot of those shots in Gen AI. How much savings would that be? Like, I think these are the questions that they're asking internally.
Blue Eye Samurai is so good.
One of the best animated movies ever made. Yeah.
Serious. It was a miniseries. Well, it was a season.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. And then, it has taken years for season two to come out.
Well, like, the difficulty with Blue Eye Samurai is it's highly adult content, but it's animated. And so, like, the audience is really small.
But I think it's not a cheap show. And it just also takes a long time to make with current tools.
But, like, that's an example of complete in-house Netflix production.
Was that all done in-house?
Yeah. Okay. One of the few. Stuff. It's interesting that they chose animation before live action to do the first AI studio.
I think that's we know that's easier to do now. Like, that's
that feels like a more achievable goal. Although I will say, once you get into the mechanics of it, there's so much hand-driven art in animation that AI still probably doesn't have yet. I mean, maybe Netflix does, who knows, but things like squash and stretch and like the timing of animated characters and like the way their mouth exaggerates when they have an expression, like, you know, it's not enough to like drive a character with like a video of yourself driving the character. Like, you really have to, you know, go above
it. Right. Because the animated characters move.
It's crazy. Like, how expressive it has to be.
Physically not possible. That's how it works.
It's beyond puppeteering. It's an art form unto itself. So like, having the training data for that, to train a model to exaggerate like that, and then to control it in a way that is meaningful for that story moment, that's the challenging part, and that's the stuff they have to solve at Ink.
And I think you're right on the money with building out these tools to figure out that level of control that animators need. All right, two quick ones. Actually, this one ties into animation, and this was just kind of a cool story breakdown. So at Disney World, Florida, there was the Aerosmith Rock and Roller Coaster. Are you familiar with this? It's been Aerosmith branded since they opened it, whatever, 20, 30 years ago. They're rebranding it to like a Muppets theme, and they're redoing the like show opener stuff. And so there is an animatronic scooter that is like, you know, part of the pre-show. And so like, it'll be a permanent robot, but the animation to program the robot, they actually mocapped a real scooter puppet that was being puppeteered by a human, mocapped him, and then put that mocap onto that data onto the animatronic
puppet.
That's
amazing.
I thought it was really, like, That's awesome. Superflow.
Yeah, because I was looking at the picture of this puppet in a mocap suit. I was like, is that just like a costume? Turns out that's a real mocap suit.
He's got a little mocap hat on.
He's got markers on his face. They're tracking like the mouth opening and stuff.
That's just great because that's like also this good hybrid of, you know, you're still able to keep that human touch and animation that the puppets are so famous for, but translate that over to a programmed robot.
I love this, Joey.
Which they
this
probably weren't able to do. You know, I don't know. Obviously, I was grew up in Florida, so I have deep ties to Disney World growing up. And so there was the Muppets 4D show that was always great, kind of fell into disrepair, and then they shut it down. And so their like trade-off was like, well, we're going to rebrand Rock and Roller Coaster to the Muppets. But the Muppet Show had permanent like robots that would kind of perform. And so I'm thinking like, oh, those robots, animatronics, never had the same level of fidelity that you could do now with both the improvement of how robotics have gotten and then also this mocap thing. So
beautiful.
That's cute. That's
beautiful.
Cool.
Beautiful execution of technology for entertainment. And shout out to Imagineers for always not getting it out of the park with that stuff. They never fail to disappoint, do they?
They're always wizards. Great stuff. Yeah. It's always fun. Cool. All right. And that's it for today's show. Links for everything we talked about, as usual, at denoisedpodcast.com.
I have nothing but thank you. Thank you for watching and listening to us a little over a year. We're getting close to our 100th episode. Joey, I think that's 2 or 3 episodes away.
Damn, man. I have not tracked this at all. So all right. We'll have to look at the actual number.
We'll figure this out. Special one.
Damn, now it's like pressure. I got to think of something.
Oh, yeah. Leave us a comment if you think of something. Because we have.
Yeah. Now I got to think of something. All right. Thanks, everyone. We'll catch you in the next episode.